This is the Share Radio News Hour with Ed Bauscher.
So I'm going to start now with Mike Bell from JP Morgan. We're going to look at today's big macro stories. We will come to Donald Trump in a minute, but let's just start first with these UK retail numbers. December's figures showing the worst monthly decline in more than 5 years. Why do you think this has happened, Mike?
Well, I don't think it's a surprise at all, really. I mean, it's surprising that the UK economy had held up as well as it has in the period following the Brexit result. There'd been a lot of talk about how expectations confounded forecasts for a slowdown, and I think this is probably just the start of that slowdown. We've seen consumer sentiment weakening over the last few months. Generally, you would tend to see that then feed through with a little bit of a lag into retail sales. So this is actually relatively expected. And part of the reason for that is simply that consumers have been kept afloat by the fact that inflation's been very low. So real wage growth has been positive, whereas going into 2017, inflation looks set to pick up further, and that will probably eliminate real wage growth and continue to weigh on consumer sentiment and hence retail spending.
So if you're saying these numbers aren't a huge surprise, have they made any real impact on markets today? And I think the pound is down, but is that anything to do with this story, or do you think it's other factors maybe?
I think at the margin it is bad for the pound, but I think the main thing is that you saw the pound rally on Theresa May's speech on the fact that it included a vote for both Houses of Parliament on the Brexit deal. I think the markets misread that initially and that they're now correcting some of that because of what they thought was, well, maybe this means that the Parliament's actually going to be able to block Brexit. Actually, in reality, all that's going to happen is they're going to get a vote towards the end of the negotiation period. Do you want to either revert to the worst case scenario World Trade Organization rules or take the deal that is on offer? So they're going to probably have a choice between a sort of best of two bad options. And so it doesn't change the picture that actually we're heading for probably a pretty hard Brexit.
Now, something we've seen since the referendum last year is that often if the pound falls, the FTSE 100 rises because, of course, the big multinationals, the Glaxos, they bring their dollars back to the UK and they get converted into more sterling. Are we seeing that today? Is FTSE up today or is it really actually pretty flat?
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the numbers now, the FTSE is basically flat. If you think about it in terms of revenues that come from abroad, the FTSE 100 gets over 70% of its sales from outside of the UK. Clearly, there's some difference depending on which sectors you look at. But our view, therefore, is given the domestic risks to the UK economy, if you're going to own UK equities, we think it makes a lot of sense to own the UK equities that are firstly large cap and secondly, that therefore get more exposure from outside of the UK economy and are not as at risk of this slowdown that we're seeing. Because we're in this slightly surreal world where bad news for the UK economy hits sterling and supports the international exporters in the FTSE 100.
I mean, we did have that amazing run, didn't we, with the FTSE? I think it was 14 days where every night it was closing at a higher level and hits lots of new record highs. But that ran out of steam. I can't remember which day it was, but just a few days ago. Why do you think that's happened? And it seems to be just continuing today with that, as you say, that flatness, really.
Well, I think that the markets moved to price in sterling where it is. Then once you saw the Theresa May speech and the rally in the pound, the obvious implication is that if the weaker pound had driven FTSE 100 up, well, a stronger pound, even though it's reflecting that people are getting a little bit more positive about the UK economy, it's actually bad for those large cap exporters. So, I mean, it makes perfect sense. But I think that actually the fact is that the direction for the pound is probably still the risk is skewed to the downside. Not dramatically further, because the pound does look cheap when you look at it against other currencies. But all the uncertainty, once you start to see headlines actually breaking that for sure banks are going to be moving staff outside of the UK, we expect that to weigh a little bit further on the pound. And that should actually support the large cap, non-domestic focused UK listed companies.
OK, well, let's go to the US and Donald Trump, who, of course, is being inaugurated today. Since his election in November, US markets have been pretty buoyant. I think a lot of excitement that he may increase infrastructure spending and cut regulation. Do you think his speech could move markets today?
He certainly has the power to move markets. Whether he's likely to actually say anything today that will get the markets going, I would be slightly surprised if he does. But I would not be at all surprised if over the next month you see some announcements from Donald Trump which have a relatively significant impact, certainly on potential individual stocks or sectors. I mean, the key thing the market is going to be focused on, though, in the more medium term, and you're not going to see this immediately, is just how much fiscal stimulus can he deliver? How much can he push through Congress? Because the market's already moved to price in a degree of fiscal stimulus. If he's actually not successful in putting that through, then that's a risk to the market. Our view is that most likely he will put through at least some fiscal stimulus. And bear in mind, this is going into a US economy which is already heating up really quite strongly. When you look at all of the sort of leading indicators for the US economy, they are flashing that the US economy is picking up in quite a healthy fashion.
And when we talk about fiscal stimulus, tax cuts, more government spending, clearly tax cuts would be pretty easy to push through Congress. I'm sure the Republican Party will support him. Infrastructure spending may be a bit dicier. Not all Republicans might be committed there. We'd be worried about the deficit. And it'll take a while to build up steam anyway. Do you think that the excitement about infrastructure spending has perhaps been a bit overdone since the election? And actually what we're going to see is a lot of tax cuts, but not that much more spending. Is that a plausible scenario?
I mean, not necessarily, because actually US infrastructure is in real need of some investment. If you look at public investment as a percentage of GDP, it's the lowest it's been in many, many decades. So there's plenty of room for them to invest in infrastructure in the US. There are roads that need redoing, schools that need rebuilding. But the problem there is that who are you going to get to do this? The unemployment rate in the US is already very low. Wage growth is already picking up. So if you then, the few people in the US who are not currently unemployed, a lot of those were involved in the building industry in 2006, going into the sort of housing crisis. If you mop those last remaining people up, give them jobs on an infrastructure program, well, then the labor market is going to be very tight and you start to see wage growth coming through, which in the short term is positive. In the medium term, it risks overheating the economy.
So earlier this week, Donald Trump was talking about the dollar, and he basically said he wasn't keen on the strong dollar, particularly with reference to China. He's still accusing the Chinese government of currency mismanagement. But we've now had comments from Trump's nominee for the Treasury, Steven Mnuchin, and he's pretty much contradicted his new boss. He still seems to be in favor of the strong dollar. He's tried to finesse it by saying that Trump's comments were on the dollar were just short-term comments, but I'm not sure we really buy that. I mean, what's your take? What do you think the administration's policy on the dollar will really prove to be? Or just is that just an impossible question? Do we have no idea?
Yeah, I mean, the truth is we don't know, but it's odd, this focus on the Chinese currency, because actually the Chinese are intervening in their currency, but they're not intervening to weaken it, they're intervening to keep it stronger. So, you know, that's misplaced, that criticism. Also, when you look at it on the official metrics which they monitor in order to actually officially say that someone is manipulating the currency, China's current account deficit is not at a level which would fall into line with the standard metrics by which they describe currency manipulation. So I think that's unfair. Also, you bear in mind that the Chinese currency, yes, it has depreciated against the dollar in the last couple of years. But actually, if you look at it on a trade-weighted basis, recently it's been pretty flat. So lots of other countries have been depreciating against the dollar as well. Really what you're seeing is the dollar rallying on the back of this monetary policy divergence trade coming back on. In other words, people betting that interest rates in the rest of the world are going to stay pretty stable, whereas the US is going to start putting interest rates up. That's caused the dollar to go up relative to lots of different currencies. And I mean, you've only got to look at sterling, for example, relative to the dollar. Sterling's down far more against the dollar than the Chinese currency is, and yet no one's talking about labelling the UK a currency manipulator.
OK, well, let's now come back to the UK and look at some figures on how many UK households have been selling up their properties and moving on. We're seeing a real fall, according to Lloyds Bank, in those figures, down 4% in 2016 year on year. Why are we seeing that drop?
Well, I think it's two factors. Firstly, house prices are pretty high. You've seen, certainly in London in particular, you've seen really phenomenal house price growth since the crisis, and particularly since 2012-13. And that's just stretching affordability, I think. And then once you add into that the uncertainty around Brexit, clearly there's the potential that, again, focused in London, but also to an extent across the country, that some jobs are going to move. Clearly, those people are going to have to sell their houses, and that puts some uncertainty in the market. And generally what you see, particularly in the London market, is that rather than actually seeing house prices fall, you tend just to see a fall in transactions because people are less willing to sell at less than they think their house is worth.
Okay. China, we've had some GDP growth figures for the fourth quarter, 6.8% growth, a bit better than many analysts expected. Consumer spending was also strong. What's your take on this, Mike?
I mean, that's the key there, isn't it? That Chinese consumption remains extremely strong. You only need to look at the retail sales numbers where you're getting growth of sort of close to 10% year on year. And if you imagine what it would feel like if retail sales in the UK were growing at 10%, everyone would be dancing and cheering in the streets.
Sure.
So, I mean, the consumption story in China remains very healthy. We think that Chinese growth is going to slow a bit this year relative to what they did last year. Because last year they were stimulated by an relatively strong public investment program from the Chinese government. And also house prices went up really quite strongly. We don't think that that's sustainable. So house price growth is likely to slow this year, not actually decline, but not grow at the same sort of pace. That means less tax revenues on the back of those house price transactions. And also less stimulus from the government, because I don't think they want to overheat the economy. So we think that China grows at about 6 to 6.3% this year. Still a pretty healthy number compared with most economies around the world, but nevertheless, it will no doubt cause headlines, as it does every time Chinese growth numbers come in slightly less strong than the previous month.
Okay, we've got a member of the board of the ECB, Benoît Cœuré. He's saying that it could be a challenge for the city to retain all of the services, its ability to sell services into Europe. Is that a valid concern, do you think, or has it been overdone, this worry that the city's going to lose so much business to mainland Europe?
I think it's a very valid concern. I mean, if you look at Theresa May's speech, it's essentially a wish list, all the things that she'd like, but with no real contemplation of the fact that you're going to have to give something up. From the Europeans' point of view, it is just not OK for them to allow Brexit to be a complete success for the UK economy. It can't be seen to be that if you leave the EU, you're just as well off as you were before. So there has to be some give. What's that likely to be? Well, it's likely to be that the trade in services in particular, which is where the UK runs the current account surplus, where we export more than we import, services is likely to be the area that's hardest to negotiate, and particularly financial services. So I would be surprised if you don't see jobs moving from London to other parts of Europe.
Mike Bell, global market strategist at JP Morgan, thanks very much for joining me today. Really good to speak to you.